Welcome back to Day the Watarda Party Line Talk Show. I'm your host, Lance Stacy, and today in studio with us are Jessica Oh from KSCS, as well as we're talking right now to Lyle McCumber. And I guess prior to going to break, you were talking about a hole. Could you explain that a little bit more and what that meant for you?
Sure. There was just a deep emptiness in my life. I mean, there were things I was looking for, love, a job, all the things that you would think would make somebody whole in life. But it was deep emptiness in there. And whenever I would drink, it was the cure to the answer, you know, for a short time in my life. It solved all my problems. Alcohol became my girlfriend, it became my employer, it became my everything.
So I guess then how, knowing that, when you look back, what was a typical week for you? Like, did you drink once a week, weekends? What was, like, the drinking pattern?
I was a binge drinker, so I could drink for 2 to 3 days sometimes. Once in a great while, it would be every day. There was no real pattern to it. It was when I had money, I could drink, and if I didn't have money, I'd find friends who had money, or they'd find me both ways.
Oh, okay. Now that kind of explains.
Yeah. Well, I had a house, so when you have a house, you can find a lot of people to party with.
And that's when you have a lot of friends, right?
Exactly.
Now that you're sober, do you still have those friends?
Not really. If I see them, we're cordial to each other. But there's the old saying, if you want to find out who your friends are, you get sober. And it's so true.
It's true. So I guess... when you look back, when did you start recognizing that things were becoming out of control in your life?
I think right from the start. I remember I accompanied a friend to an AA meeting. This is 1996 or 97, and I went to a friend to an AA meeting, and I listened to the speaker that night, and I knew everything was out of control because there was so much I could relate to at that point. And another time I was this is one of the things that helped me set my eyes on sobriety. I was watching Dr. Phil one day, and this woman was on Dr. Phil, and her life was so out of control, and I was watching that, and I realized her out of control week was like a Tuesday for me.
Okay.
I just want to jump in.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, you know, you were talking about going to this first 12-step meeting, and I mean, that was about 20 years ago. So what has the journey been like for you towards, because from, you know, for a listener, you've gone, you've stopped, you've gone, you've stopped. What are the things that, you know, stopped you from going or, you know, or brought you back during that time span?
Just, I wanted the hope of sobriety. That's what made me keep going back on and off. And then when it was like things would get very unmanageable, then I'm like, well, I know there's hope for sobriety. All I need to do is go to AA. But at the same time, I wasn't willing to do the work that AA was providing, you know, because like a lot of alcoholics, we want everything our way and our way and our way. So with that, I wasn't willing to let the program work for me. So that was my mistake with it.
When you look back, did it seem like you were going to have to make big sacrifices?
Exactly. That's what it felt like, that I was going to have to sacrifice my friends. I was going to have to sacrifice my self-will. I was going to have to sacrifice myself. Because at this point, I was so, like, I thought I knew who I was, but I really wasn't who I thought I was. So it was, the sacrifice at the time didn't seem worth it to me.
When you were at your worst, what was that hole like?
Oh, it was just awful. It was hell, basically. It was truly like living in hell for me. I didn't love myself. It was just, the emptiness kept getting bigger and bigger, and the more I tried to fill it, the less it worked, because there's always the saying that at some point alcohol stops working for you, and it really stopped working for me.
So now that you're maintaining sobriety, what's happened to that hole? What have you learned about the hole?
I've learned to fill it with loving myself, because it was always not loving myself, because it was always about hurting myself. But now I've learned to fill it with loving myself, taking care of myself. I mean, I still struggle with things here and there, but it's a lot easier than it's ever been, because when we have that hole in us, we just... It's like we don't understand why we're loved by people, and we just want to hurt ourselves. And I don't know why that hole was there from the beginning, but it just was.
And I guess one of the things are, what were some of the things that you used? Like, what helped you? Were there programs? Were there things you got involved in? You know, what things helped you towards choosing sobriety?
Well, I started going to church a lot, and I used to go to the United Church in Chateauguay, so I made friends with the minister. That's why I wasn't going to the one here. Just different little things I was doing. I was exercising, which I really need to get back to.
I think that's all of us.
Yeah, and just little things like that, little encouraging things that would help me to maintain my sobriety at the time before I went back to AA. And once I went back to Alcoholics Anonymous, life is easy.
Okay. So whenever I come on, I'll mention, you know, that addiction or substance abuse isn't just about, you know, your physical self, but your emotional health, your mental health, and your spiritual health. When you take in those other components of health, Lyle, how does that work into your story?
Well, I would just say that I'm, like, going through the program, I've become like 100 times more spiritual than I've ever been in my life. Physically, I remember days where I would just be so drained emotionally, physically, spiritually. It just wasn't fun anymore, you know. It was just, and today, my worst day is still beautiful compared to where it was 5 years ago.
So I guess one of the things is, what are you doing now to manage your sobriety?
I do a few AA meetings a week. I read the Big Book when I find time. I work my steps on a daily basis, and I'm very spiritual. Spirituality is what is helping me through it, like not only through Christianity, but through our own type of spirituality. To me, the key to staying sober is spirituality. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is based on. It's a spiritual program. So the spirituality is what's really keeping me sober at this point.
Do you get worried about maintaining your lifestyle now?
No, I don't. Not at all.
Was there a point early in your sobriety where you would get worried?
Yeah, there was, because I had gone through some little tough times here or there. Not that I don't now. But there were periods where I'm like, oh, maybe I'm going to drink again. But at this point, I'm good. But I'm saying that because I've recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. But it's still a day-to-day working effort.
So do you feel like you have a newfound confidence in yourself?
Yes, very much so, like, because today I have confidence in myself. I love myself. I care about myself. I'm starting to sound conceited.
No.
But I have a confidence in myself. I know that there's people that are out there to help me. Also, I've been going, I go to counseling through KSCS, like, for a couple of years now. And that's what one thing I want to talk about, is that the counseling really helps. Also, at the time when I started going back to Alcoholics Anonymous, I also started seeing a psychologist. So the combination of both was like heaven sent. It really changed everything for me.
So between day one of your sobriety and now, how long did it take you to develop this sense of confidence in yourself?
I'd say a good 4 years. Because I'll be honest, it took me about 10 years to get 5 years of sobriety. But even the struggle was beautiful, because I knew that there would be a light at the end of the tunnel somehow.
So it kind of helped.
Yeah, very much so.
To make you stronger?
Yeah, I would say so.
So with this, living this new lifestyle, what makes you proud?
What makes me proud is that I can look at myself in the mirror and say, I know what I did the night before, know that I didn't hurt anybody, say anything stupid. Well, I mean, I still do on once in a while, I have to be honest, but it's just knowing that I'm not ashamed anymore of who I am, because I was embarrassed about who I was. I was embarrassed to go places, people talking about me, and I mean, I knew people were talking about me, because at the end it was very dark, you know, for me. So there'd be people asking me, were you okay? And the honest truth was I wasn't, but I would still be saying, yes, I'm okay. And I remember once a friend asking me if I was okay, and I'm like, yes. And she's like, are you sure? And I'm like, how do I answer that, you know? But today I have the confidence in myself that I've never had before. And I have to say a lot of it is thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous.
Hmm. All right. So, Lyle, thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
I'm so glad you're here, because I see Lyle all the time on Facebook posting, and, you know, it's, again, you know, talking about these stories, sharing these stories, that is going to get the community on the route to healing. You know, in my role as a prevention worker in addictions, I do a lot of presentations and, you know, try and share as much information as possible. But, you know, the real healing, it really comes from, you know, being able to, you know, talk about these real stories and make connections between people.
Absolutely.
So in an effort to make connections between people, when we do these shows, we try and find usually a man and a woman to come on the show at the same time, because it's really, you know, a different person, a different story, a different experience. So I'd like to introduce our next guest. Joining us in studio is Lisa White.
Hi.
Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you.
So I guess we'll start with you. Why did you want to share your story of sobriety?
Well, because I feel it's important to get the word out for those who are in the middle of this type of life. You know, today I feel good, and I was asked to do it, and that's where I'm at in my sobriety. I learned, like, when you're asked to help, you jump on the opportunity. So as nervous as I am, here I sit, you know, to just tell.
Okay. How long have you been sober?
Well, I will be 11 months the end of this month. And prior to that, I was 3.5 years. Now, the difference is 3.5 years was what Lyle touched on, which is to be dry sober.
Right.
11 months in the program after, you know,
okay,
a bit of a slip, they call it, which, you know.
So what has sobriety been like for you? And let's talk about the second time around. We'll talk about what's going on now for you in the last 11 months.
In the last 11 months?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, I came in after being sober for you know, a good 3 years. Plus, I was already pretty set in having the proper lifestyle in place. So it wasn't, you know, that much of a change. What happened when I decided to try it this way, with the program, which is, you know, the 12-step program, is it's hard to explain. It was a wonderful thing. My eyes really opened. I see the big picture now, you know, how disconnected I was, and like a spiritual awakening. And yeah, I feel really great today.
That's excellent. So let's talk a little bit about, when did you start using alcohol or substances? Like, what was your life before?
Okay, well, you know, in my teenage years, I didn't do much. I was, I guess, an average good child. I was very athletic and outgoing, and I joined things, and I had a great life. I come from a very good family, and I was blessed. The change, you know, at about 18 maybe, I wouldn't say I was, you know, in a horrible place, just the average, what you think's normal at that age, you know, going out, having fun on the weekends. I was a social drinker. I loved to socialize, but I started to change, you know, from being athletic and outgoing to, you know, my focus was more on the fun of that type of lifestyle. I loved outings and dinners and dancing and music and singing, which is quite normal, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't feel like it was abnormal.
So I guess now as an adult and you kind of look back on it, what was the attraction? Was it the partying? Was it that lifestyle that really captured you and pulled you in? Or
yeah, well, there's emotional causes that drive people to escape realities, which is, you know, now I see the big picture, you know, I'm trying to connect all the dots,
right?
Like what happened, you know, because it's average to, you know, it's not sober living wasn't an option. I didn't know it was an option. I enjoyed you know, having
dancing and
exactly
partying,
all those things, and it went hand in hand with my age. Like, it was average and normal. So yeah,
so when you look back, when did you spot a time when it was getting out of control?
Well, you know, I had my first child when I was in my mid-20s, late 20s, and I remember at that point, I mean, not that I was sad, but I just remember deep down inside not being excited to finally not be pregnant anymore, so I could, you know, go back to social drinking.
Right.
You know, and to me, like, there was something wrong there, you know? Why is that important to me? It was important to me. I truly loved having wine with dinner, or I truly loved, you know, special occasions and getting dressed up. And that was very much, like, you know,
a part of your life.
A part of my life. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But, you know, it does creep up on you and take control. And then fast forward to now I'm in my 30s, my children are 7 years apart, so now I'm my late 30s, mid-30s, I have a second child, and, you know, that's adding another 10 years from, you know, being in my mid-20s, now I'm in my mid-30s, and I'm expecting now, but at this point, it's totally different. I've become to the point of being sick and tired of it. Hangovers are no fun. You know, I'm getting older. It's not acceptable, as acceptable, to consume multiple times a week. I could say that I had, you know, developed the habits of having wine at, you know, by myself while I'm cooking supper, or you know, maybe not one glass, but the bottle, and then getting up and not feeling well. And what I want to touch on is the, I skipped over the whole thing, but my mental health. I had a big battle with anxiety, severe anxiety attacks, which turned into phobias. And I was, you know, scared. And anyone who knows what that's like, it's not nice. You know, taking medicine for it, going to see doctors, going to therapy, doing different types of therapy, and trying to pinpoint, you know, what is wrong with me? Why is this happening? You know, it was it's a horrible thing to feel, but never coming out and pinpointing or admitting that, you know, I would take medicine, but at the same time I'm drinking, it's counteracting, never truly admitting it. So now I see the big picture, and that my mental health suffered because of the social drinking that I was taking a part of.
And I think part of it, by labeling it social drinking, and it's acceptable. It's allowed. It's out there in society. It's within the community. It's within our families, you know, and it's okay. Because if you choose not to go to events and you're the sober one, you're usually the last one to be invited or, you know, and I'm being honest, you know, you know, because you don't fit in.
I was, I was functioning, you know, I was a wife, I had children, I had a job, I had nice things, I considered myself successful, I a home and all these things, so definitely trying to juggle, you know, all those things and just, you know, I was not doing a good job inside, but then on the outside it looked fine.
Yeah,
you know, I was having fun, but now I see it was very distorted way of thinking, and that my ego was in charge, and I came up with denial and defenses and excuses. You know, the fear is the root of all anxiety and depression, and you know that's where I'm at now. I see it all, you know, and that's why I'm here. I want to, you know, let people know that I see it.
And, you know, I feel like it's really important to talk about the depression, talk about the anxiety, because, you know, like Lisa was saying, it wasn't actually being dealt with.
Yes.
Right? You know, and we talk about this a lot of times on the shows, which is, you know, I've come on the show a couple of times to talk about benzodiazepines, which are a group of medications that are used to treat anxiety. And they're very effective, but they're very easily abused. And, you know, the fact is that you can't really get over your anxiety unless you put the work into, you know, without, maybe you need help from medication, but that's supposed to be short term.
Yes.
You know, it's, if you want to get through that, it's the long term work. It's the hard work that makes a difference. And, you know, from the perspective of addictions, there's a whole other level where, you know, now where we have, marijuana being legalized for recreational purposes coming up, and you know, you hear all the time that it's an effective treatment for anxiety, not unless you're doing the long-term work.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter whether you're drinking, whether you're using benzodiazepines, or whether you're using marijuana to mask the symptoms of anxiety. It's still there unless you're going to do the long-term work.
Absolutely. Ladies and Lyle, we worked our way up to a break, and we'll take a break, and we'll be right back.